The time has come.
I like that.
The time is now for Victoria Stilwell's Positively Podcast. She's a world-renowned dog trainer.
Seen enough dogs today, have you?
She's the host of It's Me or the Dog.
I'm coming to train you.
Along with co-host Holly Ferver.
You don't play around with that name, do you?
I am a fan of sweaty balls.
She's Victoria Stilwell, and she's ready to go.
This is a lovely way to start the day.
You get the busy bee. I need to trim her whiskers.
I see some poo here.
I feel a little bit better now because I'm the only one who usually feels stupid during the podcast.
Now, let's head to the studio and get this Positively Podcast started.
We're back again.
Can you believe it?
I'm so excited because I remember last year, at the beginning of last year, we were going to do more podcasts.
Oh, that's right.
But you were traveling, I was traveling, and just couldn't get together.
We didn't do any last year.
No, hardly any. I think maybe one or two.
It's surprising. See, we're still good friends. We still hang out.
I know. But anyway, we're doing these because lots of people have been asking about them. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, we're going to bring podcasts back.
I like it. Bringing podcasts back.
So how have you been?
Awesome.
As well, everywhere.
Yeah. And you?
Yeah, everywhere. But tell us a little bit about your year. Your 2019.
2019 was definitely better than 2018, as you know. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, my husband was in the hospital for a long time in 2018, but he's out. He's better now. And so 2019 was a year without much medical stuff. We had it in the beginning of the year, but I did do some traveling. I went to Alaska and did a glacier hike. I went to Africa again on vacation to South Africa on safari, which, you know, I could live there. I was thinking, how can I be a safari guide? But here's the thing. As we're driving in these jeeps, and like our guide, who was amazing, her name was Louise, she was South African native, she would go, oh, look at that bird. And I'm like, what bird? Like way in the distance. Or she'd be like, oh, you see the group of elephants? And I'm like, what is she looking at? I have terrible eyesight, so I could not be a guide is what I learned.
No. Or if you're directionally challenged like I am.
Oh, yeah.
Then you're telling it that's on your right when it actually everything is on your left. I was a tour guide in London.
No way.
Right. So yeah, during between university and when I kind of was deciding my career, I did tour guiding and I learned of the big bus company. Right. So when we took tours, and of course I passed all my guide exams, and then when we took tours, I would say on the right, and of course then I'd be looking to the left. I mean, but then it's even harder because then you've got people, you're facing people, right? So it's on their left and your right and whatever it was. So that challenged me, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is why I didn't stay a London guide for long, but still love it, still yes. Love the history of London. So yes. If anybody's in London and I'm in London, and if you want a guided walk in the places where tourists don't normally go, maybe I will take you on one.
I love it. I love it. I want it. I'm in. Anyway, so just a lot of nice traveling, a lot of time spent with friends. I didn't travel as much this past year, which has been great because I've had a chance to sort of reconnect with friends. I realize I'm on the road a lot, even though I do love traveling. And then there were times where I was like, oh, dear Lord, this is how people don't stay married because they stay together 24/7. So it's nice to get away. But it was good. It was good. How about you? You did a ton of traveling.
I did a ton of traveling. I did some really great seminars, great conferences. And don't forget, people, if you are in the UK or you can get to the UK, May 9th and 10th, we have the National Dog Behavior Conference. Oh. We have some amazing speakers, one of whom we're going to talk about today, and because she's doing incredible new studies. She'll be talking, but we have great speakers. So if you can come, you can go to positively.com/DBC. We'll have the link up on the podcast website and you will be able to see it there and get your tickets. Where be there or be square.
In London?
It's in Coventry.
Where's Coventry?
Coventry is kind of middle England. Well, it's near Birmingham.
Okay.
Right? So it's, yes. So it's kind of more towards the middle of the UK.
Because here's me thinking, England. Maybe I should go and then create vacation around that time and then you can give me a tour of London.
Hey, I'm there. Yeah. So if you want to come, but we've got great speakers. We've got Sarah Heath, who is going to be talking about arousal in dogs. And of course we have many, many dogs.
What does that mean?
Well, a lot of people call it reactivity.
Oh, like my dog Barnsley.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we're talking about arousal, what that means, what it is. And if your dog is I'll put this like in quotes, reactive, mm-hmm. how you deal with that. I'm going to be talking, well, I've got something very exciting, which I might talk about on a later podcast, but it is protocols for dogs to be able to deal with overwhelming situations. Mm-hmm. So a dog like Barnsley, but any dog, really. It doesn't have to be a dog that's got any anxiety issues or fearful issues, because all of our dogs will be challenged at some point,
right,
regardless of how resilient or confident they are.
Right.
So I'll be talking about that. Then we have Sarah Fisher, who every single time she speaks, it just blows my mind.
Who is
so
she?
She's going to be talking about free work. Well, she is a trainer, and she used to be a T-Touch practitioner. But now she has something called ACE, which is a lot of, they call free work. And she deals a lot with dogs that have issues. And free work is basically, and I'd like her to talk more about it, but if you come to the conference, you'll hear more about it. But it truly, it leaves the dog a lot more choice to the dog. And you know that I'm all about choice right now, teaching dogs. But it really gives dogs a lot of different choices. Mm-hmm. So I really love what she does. You've got to come and hear that.
I'd love to see
that. And then we've got Holly Root Gutteridge, and she has done a really interesting study at Sussex University's about, do dogs understand our vocalizations?
Oh, I think they do.
Absolutely.
Like actual words and or emotions behind it?
Actual words, right? So, okay.
Oh, of course they do, because I can tell you this. My dogs at night, when Sean and I are sitting like in the TV room or whatever, and they have to go outside to pee, they look at us and I'll say, do you have to go out? And then they run to the back door. They know what I'm saying. Sometimes they'll say, are you hungry? And they won't run to the back door. And then it got to the point where we were both lazy and I was like, hey, can you let the dogs out? They would run to the back door. So someone had to get up. So we started to spell it. Hey, somebody, can you let them out? And then about, I don't know, a couple months later, I said to Sean, can you let him out? And they go running to the back door. I'm like, great, now our dogs spell.
Now they spell.
But they figure it out. Don't they relate, like, the words to the
actions?
Yeah,
well, the dogs were recorded either hearing different speakers saying the same word or the same speaker saying different words. And these are speakers that, or people that the dogs don't know, mm-hmm. right? So according to the study's findings, the dogs were able to recognize the same word when spoken by different people, and were also able to distinguish between different people by the sound of their voice.
So what about, like, so I know Barnsley, if you say walk to Barnsley, right, his head pops up and he gets excited and goes to the door, right? But I say, hey, you want to go for a walk? And he knows it. But if somebody says it in a sentence like, hey, I think I'm going to take the dog for a walk in a minute, I have to watch. I don't know if he reacts to it if you're saying it differently or if I'm not talking right to him.
Well, some of the studies, as I understand it, and Holly will speak much more about it, but it's the beginning of the words that they recognize.
Oh.
So it's the what that they recognize, but also because humans are very habitual, right?
Yeah.
We say the same thing. So you want to go for a walk? And it's that whole sentence with the way you see it. It goes up at with the way you say it. It goes up at the end with your tone, with your mm-hmm. intonation. And that's what they're listening to, right? But can they actually understand different words? So it's all about phenomes. I call them phenomes, but phonemes.
Yeah.
I don't know how
basically
to pronounce it. I'm
yeah,
really
yeah.
sorry.
Holly will tell us.
But yes, it's the ability to recognize words is the same when spoken by different people as critical to speech, she says. And the research shows that, despite previous assumptions, this spontaneous ability is not uniquely human. And dogs share this linguistic talent.
Do you remember not too long ago, we actually aired it on HLN all over the place, I think even CNN. There was a dog, a woman trained her dog. She's a speech therapist, and she trained her dog to speak. In that, she did it with children and people who couldn't communicate. She had like a board where she would push certain things that would have the words to it, right? And it would be like a computer that had words. And that's what she gave to people who couldn't communicate, so that they could tell you a sentence by pushing, I am hungry. Like they would push that. Her dog learned how to do it. She was able to train. But the thing is, the dog comprehended what it was saying. There was probably 24 different, you know, rows and rows of different words and things that it would speak. and it hit the right ones in the right sentence to make a complete thought. Like, that to me blows my mind. Like, that dog understood the meaning behind it, not just the sounds.
And I think our dogs are sitting there going, God, it's taking you people a long time, a really long time to figure us out, because dogs are just dogs, right? They've been dogs, and they've always been there. And yeah. It's just taking us, oh, my God, we've just discovered this. Well, yeah, and there's a lot of people out there. I mean, I saw the pictures. I read the article about what this woman is doing, and it's fantastic. There's many people out there that have different kinds of buttons for their dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to go for a walk, or I want to eat something, or do you want to go out? Do you have a yes or no button? Or we do it on our hands. Like, the right hand is a yes, and the left hand is a no. Do you want to go for a walk, yes or no? And the dog will nose either the right hand if it wants to go for a walk, or the left hand if it doesn't want to go for a walk. So it's a way of communication. And that's this is where dog training is going.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, there's many people that are still stuck in the old traditional style of training. And when
we're
thinking
that a dog is just an animal and it doesn't have the higher capacity that we know it does, they don't treat it like that. They treat it as a, like, where people, you know, I know a lot of people have dogs for different reasons, but people who have families who live in a suburb, not a working farm or anything like that, and their dog lives outside. I'm like, why do you even have a dog? Like, it's part of the family or not. I mean, that's just me. I get it on a farm, a working farm, if you've got shelter for it. But some people are like, oh yeah, my dog lives outside. I'm like, well, why even have it?
Yeah. You know, our whole idea of dog ownership in the West, you know, we have dogs in our homes, which seems crazy to people who live in different countries,
right,
and go, oh my God, I mean, these dogs either are seen as vermin or they're definitely outside dogs. They're not in the home. They're too dirty, right? Mm-hmm. So it depends on what country you live in. But, you know, we're talking about America here. We live in America. I mean, I travel around the world and I speak around the world. And of course, I do a lot of work in England too. I've educated myself on all kinds of styles of training, whether I agree with it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And some of my education has been about e-collars. I've seen people in both the companion and the working dog world use e-collars for training dogs.
What do you mean, like e-collar?
Shock collars.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so shock collar industry, or the trainers who use shock collars, don't like to use the word shock. They like to use the word mostly e-collars.
It doesn't change what it is.
It doesn't change what it is, but they will argue vehemently about the way that they train. And just as, you know, they are just as passionate about the way they train dogs as we positive trainers are about the way we train dogs. Mm-hmm. So just before Christmas, Tracy Hotchner, who is the Radio Pet Lady, do check her out, because she does have a really great podcast. She has a great radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find her on NPR, and I've been on her show many times. She had done this interview and with quite a controversial title. It was, e-collars can be part of positive dog training relationships. Right. And I didn't know that Tracy Hotchner had been taught by trainers on how to use the e-collar and uses e-collars on her dogs as well. And I hadn't realized this until this came out and found out she'd been trained by a trainer called Amy Sadler, who uses e-collars. And now, why Amy Sadler came up was that she has this program called Dogs Playing for Life. And what it is that dogs in shelters, they spend all their time in kennel runs.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dogs Playing for Life, as I understand it, is, and I've seen it being done, but I don't want to misspeak, but it pairs dogs up or groups dogs up and gives them a chance to get out and play and interact with each other and play with each other. And it is literally life-saving.
Mm-hmm.
Because these dogs get the chance to get out of their kennel runs and to play. And there is no better exercise than play. And there's no better way to understand social interaction than for dogs to play with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So the program is great. And shelters all around the country adopt this program. There's the there's a national canine center down in Florida that shelters will also send their difficult dogs to. And it's run by Amy Sadler and her team. And at this center in Florida, they use e-collars as part of their training. So Tracy was talking about and doing an interview with Amy about some controversy that had been with Best Friends. Amy Sadler used to do a lot of seminars for Best Friends. And without getting into too much detail, there was a split between them because people were angry that Best Friends might be considering sending some of their difficult dogs down to this center in Florida for Amy's team to train, but they would train and use e-collars. Mm-hmm. So people who are positive, or a lot of fundraisers, were very angry at Best Friends for even considering doing this. Mm-hmm. And so relationships broke down and there was a whole hoo-ha. So Tracy was talking about that problem. But throughout the interview with Amy, she was talking extolling the virtues of e-collars. And first of all, I didn't like the words Tracy was using to describe dog owners. And quite honestly, even though she said she wasn't about dog trainers, and I didn't like, and then I was sort of blown away by the misunderstanding there seemed to be about what positive trainers do. And that, is it right that if you've got a difficult dog, the only way to turn it around or rehabilitate it is to put an e-collar on it? That seemed to be the argument. I've heard in years and years and years of standing and waving that positive flag, I've had so many people from the other side not be so kind towards me and my message, but also
to put it lightly,
but to say positive training works on the small fluffy dogs and your puppies, but Victoria Stillwell, can you train a big dog with, you know, tough problems, or a red zone dog, or try this on a police dog?
I can personally say yes. I'm proof positive. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? I have a 78 pound black and tan coon hound who is highly, if you say reactive, but emotionally unstable, who was on Prozac or fluoxetine, and would not only first started chasing cars, as you know, and barking at cars and lunging, and then it started at bicycles and scooters, and then it happened to other dogs and people. And I would take him for a walk in my neighborhood, and he would bark and lunge at people and other dogs. Now, you taught me how to handle that, and I say to him, hey, you know, just FYI, like, people would come by with their dog. He's not real good with other dogs or people, so, you know, I have another dog who I'd love to, you know, have you guys interact with, but not this one, and everyone respected the wishes. Mm-hmm. Even people coming to my house. It was scary because I don't want someone coming to my house and getting bitten. And with positive reinforcement, you got him to the point where not only is he fine with other people and he welcomes people into our house, but also in those, you were talking earlier, the stressful situations. Like if we have more than a couple people over, it's too much for him. He's just very, you know, we call him extra. But he's
he is extra.
Right. But he now knows to dismiss himself and go upstairs, and he goes and lays down in my closet until the noise and the activity dies down, and then he comes down and everybody's happy. And there was never an e-collar, never anything negative. He was all positively trained. Although I will tell you this, that Sean and I thought about. When we first got him, I had never had a puppy before. And I sent him to a place. Everyone told us, oh, it's a great place for 2 weeks to do training, not knowing anything. And everyone's like, oh, it's great. So we did it because I had friends who had great results, not knowing it was dominance training. Mm-hmm. I am not convinced that that's not what created this problem to begin with. Like when you have a child and the way you treat a child, behavioral issues come out later. So I take blame and think that may be part of it. And part of it may be his chemistry, but part of it may be that learned behavior that was set in, you know, when he was 11, 12, 13 weeks old.
You know, our dogs, we need to, my whole argument for not using e-collars While the e-collar trainers will say, we don't just use them for correction, we use them for negative reinforcement, right? And what they mean by that is they put pressure, 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 pressure. When the dog performs what they want the dog to perform, they take the pressure off. So, for example, let's say you wanted to get your dog to sit, right? So on a low setting, they stim the dog. So as we'd say, shock, 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 but they'd say tap, 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 tap the dog. And then when the dog sits, the tapping stops. Do you see what I mean? So that's negative reinforcement. You apply the pressure, dog does what you want it to do, and then you take the pressure off. And that's sort of the way of teaching dogs to sit and lie down. And they mostly do it for recall. It's sort of the extendable arm, you know. You can get your dog, if your dog is running full pelt, you can, hey, I'm here. And then they do deliver the shock, and then the dog goes up. So they don't like calling it a shock. They call it a stim, a tap. But here's my point about
this.
Doesn't
that dog live in fear its whole life of, well, something negative's going to happen at any one time? Because they don't, can't put it together all the time.
Sometimes, look, so this, I think, obviously requires a much larger conversation. Mm-hmm. First of all, I understand, and this might be a little controversial myself, I understand why people use them. Mm-hmm. Because they work, right? Mm-hmm. And they work. They can suppress behavior. And so it looks like the dog's got a behavior change if it's used for correction. And, a dog will perform the behavior to avoid. The dog will practice avoidance and perform the behavior and will do it to get that pressure, that stim, to stop. So you can train a dog like that. But why would you want to? Mm-hmm. When there are so many other ways to train dogs, so many other effective, really quick ways. And when you're talking about using it on these dogs, right? So the last chance dogs. So this whole thing with Amy Sadler, the founder of Dogs Playing for Life, director of the Canine Center of Florida, when she talks about the many training techniques that come into play when trying to save and rehabilitate last chance dogs at risk of euthanasia, she was talking about how misconceptions and pushback about remote trainers, e-collars, has caused Best Friends Animal Sanctuary to choose not to send their most challenging dogs to her training center because of her use of e-collars. They're saying, the e-collar trainers are saying, that's ridiculous. You're saving dogs' lives. The positive trainers and other people are saying, why, Best Friends, are you sending, were you going to send your dogs to this woman who uses e-collars?
Does Best Friends, or does anybody say, like, oh, look, we've tried every single thing and this is the very last of the
list? Oh, yes, absolutely, 100%. Best Friends Animal Sanctuary is exactly that, a sanctuary where the most difficult dogs that can't go anywhere else go. The Michael Vick dogs go there, a lot of mm-hmm. dog-fighting dogs, a lot of cruelty cases, a lot of very compromised dogs. This is seen as a last-ditch attempt, a last resort to saving these dogs' lives. So you can understand why people do it and why people want to give mm-hmm. those dogs a chance.
Right.
The whole misconception here is that the e-collars are the saving grace. And let me just talk very quickly about correction. When your dog is doing a behavior you don't like and you correct it with an e-collar and the behavior stops, what you're doing is suppressing behavior. Mm-hmm. You're mm-hmm. not changing it.
Because they don't understand why, they just want that pain to stop.
Because if that dog is in the same situation again without the collar on, what's going to happen? Chances are the dog is going to perform the behavior again.
Because they're
right?
not getting that negative.
Right. And if the
feedback.
Collar doesn't work, and if... So, the other way is that if... E-collars are designed, when used properly, because that's another thing they say, mm-hmm. when used properly, they don't cause pain. But actually, they're designed, when used properly, to cause pain. Mm-hmm. And they have a dial. So you can maybe give a correction on one or two, and that correction doesn't work. So then you turn it up to three or four, and that correction's not working. So then you turn it up to five and six, and then maybe the dog's reacting. Well, now all of a sudden you've gone from one, and now we're on for something that feels like weird, like a little mosquito mm-hmm. bite, to now something that's hurting. their argument is that these e-collars, or Tracy's argument is that these e-collars should only be used by trainers that know what they're doing with them. But we're talking about an industry that is tens of millions of dollars every year. These companies that sell these shock collars, pet stores that sell shock collars, are making tens of millions of dollars. One major pet store, the last figure that I heard, and this was about 5 years ago, was $60 million selling e-collars alone. Where do you think those e-collars are going to?
Mm-hmm.
Trainers?
Mm-mm.
Or the general public?
General public.
If you set yourself up as an e-collar trainer and you say that these things are okay, but you say general public shouldn't use them, you need to lead by example, because if you're using them, the general public are going to use them. Well, so stop using them, and then the general public's going to stop using them and find something else that is just as effective.
Doesn't make any sense is that if when they train them with that and then the dog goes to someone's home and they're not using it, the behavior is going to be completely different because that collar is not there and that correction is not there.
It could. I mean, hopefully they do their due diligence and work the dog out of the collar before they send it to the home.
Have they done any studies about following these dogs to see whether there's other kinds of behaviors, like a dog that was trained with positive reinforcement
yes.
and then a dog that's trained with e-collars, and then later on their behavior, the dogs had the same kind of problem. So say they were both reactive or both aggressive dogs, right? And then you train them two different ways. Do they go back and say, well, this dog who was trained with the e-collar has this, this, and this, and
right.
this dog without...
There needs to be I know that there is a study happening now.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there is large data gathering happening now. Here in the US, yes. And it's going to be very exciting because I think it's going to show, you know,
those
results. But there have been a lot of studies done by various animal science universities around the world that have done some not so great studies and some really good studies. There's one really good study that was done by Daniel Mills at the University of Lincoln in the UK. And it was a very, very good study. And it studied the effect of dogs that were trained with shock collars against dogs that were not trained with shock collars. And the trainers that they used were industry standard shock collar trainers. So they were those, quote, trainers that were using them, quote, properly,
mm-hmm.
right? And they saw in this study where with the different kind of training that the dogs were trained using e-collars had high levels of cortisol, which is a stress hormone, in their blood, and that they were exhibiting more stress-related behaviors while being trained with the e-collars.
Mm.
So... Now, dogs can exhibit stress behaviors when they're being trained in positive humane training as well. But there was more with the e-collar. So my whole thing is, if you are not going to recommend these collars for the general public to buy, why, if you are a leader, why are you using them yourself? Because if you're saying the general public shouldn't use them...
Because they're not good.
You're setting yourself up for an example. What do you think shelters are going to do? They're going to see your program and they're going to go, yep, we're going to put those on. And they are going to be abusing their dogs because they're going to put it up to 10. And
because they don't know...
This is, again, it's a very long conversation, but...
Aren't there countries that have banned them?
Yes, many have
why?
Banned.
So why? I mean, so
well,
if they...
Well, the UK is in the process of mm-hmm. banning them. Places like Germany and Italy, Finland, Denmark, Sweden, they've banned them they banned them both for working dogs and for companion dogs because the ability to cause pain and anxiety and stress and fear and exacerbate all of that is the studies have shown that there is an increased likelihood of causing that. And that has been an ethical and a moral decision, but also we want emotionally stable dogs. And you've got people shocking them like that, you're not going to have emotionally stable dogs, both in the working dog industry. And remember, I work in both industries and have seen shock collars used by all kinds of trainers in both industries. And I don't need studies to show me what my eyes see myself when I see dogs trained like that with the stress-related behaviors. And here's the thing. Positive trainers work every day with really tough cases. And they save dogs' lives every day with really tough cases. So for the other side to say, well, you're aware they're only the ones that can save, is totally false.
Two things come to my mind. One, it seems like, it's a lot more difficult to do it positively. And so, well, when you have another option that's easy because it's inflicting pain, well, let's just do that. But two, these countries that have banned shock collars, are they seeing some kind of outbreak of bad behavior or anything? Is anything changing?
No,
is it
not
still
at all.
The same results? Because now they're using positive, but they're still ending up with the same results of being able to save some very, you know, extreme dogs' lives.
Yes, I mean, more dogs that are getting
euthanized
than normal. Yes, but the whole idea of positive training takes longer. It truly does not.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. Positive training, I can teach a dog to sit, stay, and come when called in a day. I mean, it's really easy to do that.
I will say this. You taught my dog to leave it in 10 minutes,
yes.
For the record.
So that's easy. But we must never, ever, and I feel like this does dogs real injustice by saying, if you've got a dog that is reactive like Barnsley, or you got a dog that is anxious or fearful in some way, or, you know, looks like it's being dominant or whatever those words are, and you shock it, then you have just made that behavior a lot worse. And
you may have created more behavior.
You've created more. And that's my thing. It's just unsafe. And, mm-hmm. and part of a trainer's job is to teach humans how to teach their dogs. And also we must stand up for public health and safety. And there are some dogs that are beyond repair.
Mm-hmm.
And
like
so
humans.
it is our duty as and people who are dedicated their lives to doing this. Sometimes they have to make difficult decisions and they shouldn't be ripped over the coals because they've had said, yes, this dog is a liability. It's a danger to society. There is no wonderful, beautiful sanctuary to take this dog. Mm-hmm. So a decision has to be made, right? So we have a duty to do that. Dogs have an emotional life. If you are stressed out, you're fearful, you're anxious, you go to a therapist, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
But are you going to be cured in an hour?
Or you live a life that's really uncomfortable and, you know, if you don't get help, you suffer.
Right. So I'm just saying, just one shock is not going to fix a dog that has a lot of problems, right? Don't do them a disservice. Mm-hmm. Your dog has a rich and emotional life. If your dog has a problem, it's going to take a little longer than just one shock to change your dog's mind, and that's what positive trainers do. That was kind of intense for the first.
I know. It's like
podcast.
Welcome back, starting 2020, like at it.
Yeah. Anyway, if you're interested, I would go to radiopetlady.com to listen to, because apart from that, she has really, really great guests on, and I have to say again, I think Amy Sad is doing amazing work with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I just.
So the fact that somebody says, I'm going to dedicate my life to trying to save a dog's life,
yes,
that's
and
in
she
a
does.
Really bad place. It's like a therapist going into maybe the prison system or somewhere and saying these
yep.
people have emotions and stuff. But on the
she
flip
does.
Side, though, something, and not to take too much of a left turn, but, you know, if you train a puppy early, right, you can sort of try and prevent some of those bad behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I think about Barnsley, and I send him away, whatever, but if that does have something to do with it, if I had done it the right way, and you did something in 2019, you wrote a book.
I did. It's
and
called The Ultimate Guide to Raising a Puppy. And it is, you know, prevention is better than
right,
cure,
right.
isn't it? But
it's like if you don't eat too many sweets, you won't be a type 2 diabetic. So why not curb your
right.
diet now before later? And so that might help too. Like I think about that. You
That's
know?
One of the reasons why I wrote this book. And it's available here in the US, but it's also going to be available in the UK next year.
That's
well,
awesome.
No, this year.
It's 2020.
2020.
It's 2020. Okay,
oh my
so,
gosh.
Going to a little bit like, so what's on tap this year for you, 2020? Here we are in January.
Well, again, the exciting thing is our academy.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are interested in becoming a dog trainer, please go to vsdogtrainingacademy.com and you can find out more information about the incredible dog trainer course that we have. You can start right now, but if you want the in-person track, so it's one course. Mm-hmm. It is a six-month online course, but you can have up to a year to complete it. But as part of that, we also offer an addition if people want that, and it's the in-person track, where if you live in England, you come twice to a facility we have in England where you learn with myself and other faculty. If you live in the United States or in other parts of the world, you want to come here, we have two sessions in Atlanta where you come and learn with me and other faculty. So everybody does the online portion of it, which is cyber classes and webinars and online. But if you do the in-person track, you get the additional mentors and things like that.
It's so very cool.
Amazing course. And so if you want to find out information about it, you can go to vsdogtrainingacademy.com. And our dates are open for the in-person track.
I know. I visited one because we did a story on you as a top performer, and we went to one of the classes. Remember?
Yes.
And it was fun. And all I kept thinking is, do you need a volunteer who doesn't really know much about dogs to show the wrong way, and then you can correct my behavior? But it's very cool.
You're doing
it's
amazingly fun. Well. But, well, I think we've come to the end of this podcast, and don't worry, because we're coming back.
Yeah.
We're coming back. I mean, there's a lot more to talk about. A lot more to talk about.
Apparently, we're taking 2020 by the horns. We're not like no prisoners.
Oh, we are. But I'd love to hear people's reactions.
You know,
but keep it, be nice. You know, I'm all for discussion.
Yeah.
But if somebody is cruel to me, if somebody swears at me or what, you know.
Well, here's the thing.
I'm not going to take that. That's not fair.
And here's something.
If you want to just discuss and debate, I'll do that all day.
Here's one of the things that you said that was really interesting. You said, I understand where some people are coming from.
I do.
And that's it, right? Like, we all aren't agree. We don't, you know, like, my favorite color is purple and yours is not. And I'm not going to convince you that purple should be your favorite color, but you're going to understand why I like purple and I'm going to understand. So the whole idea is even like in politics, or in personal situations, you can respect the other person, understand why they think why they do. Mm-hmm. You don't have to try and change them, you know, unless you feel like it's something that's hurting them or harming them. But to just be able to say, I can see from your perspective why you feel that way, I think we would have a lot more productive discussions rather than, no, your way's the wrong way. Because guess what? I've had many discussions with people who I think, well, I think this and they think that, clearly. And then when they tell me and I listen to why, I can understand why. Now, it may not change my mind, but sometimes I go, you know what? They have a really good point. I never thought of it that way. Mm-hmm. But if I couldn't listen and understand why you think that, then I would never see your point of view. And you just shut people out. And I think that 2020, we should do a lot more of that. And I think it'll make it easier to have these harder discussions about positive training, dominant training, you know, different things like that, because everybody has their own beliefs. You can't invalidate somebody's feelings. You can invalidate facts, but not their feelings. And if it comes from a place of honesty and sincerity, you can understand why they come to that.
100%.
So let's just be kind. Kindness is powerful, says one of my really, really bestest friends.
No,
and I think that's the greatest thing ever. And by the way, it's her. It's you. Kindness is powerful. I use it all the time. When people say, what's your quote, your favorite quote? I'm like, it came from Victoria Stilwell. But it is true, you know. And my grandmother, who will be 98 in a couple months, I'll never forget, I had one of your shirts, Victoria Stilwell shirts, that says kindness is powerful. And I wore it one day when we were going out. I went to visit her in Florida, and she stopped me. And sometimes my grandma now, you know, her mind isn't always there, and, you know, she kind of repeats herself. But she looked at me, and she said, that is the most incredible shirt. She goes, never forget that. And that stuck to me, the fact that,
wow,
somebody who's lived through 140 presidents, it seems, and, you know, all these, she was born in 1922, right?
Wow.
So the fact that she said that's the most profound thing, that anybody, kindness is powerful, I think, you know, and that's what we should do 2020. Kindness is powerful.
Thanks for tuning in to Victoria Stilwell's Positively Podcast. For more information, visit positively.com. Get connected on Facebook and YouTube as Victoria Stilwell, or follow her on Twitter at Victoria S. Be sure to tune in next time as Victoria helps to change dogs' lives positively.